Would you please stand for the flag salute? Councilmember Zimmer.
We place to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Welcome, everyone. Ms. Julie, could you call the roll, please?
Councilmember Onslow?
Here.
Councilmember Zimmer?
Here.
Councilmember Wells?
Here.
Councilmember Akeley?
Here.
Councilmember Lindsay?
Here.
Councilmember Day?
Here.
Mayor Stos?
Here. Thank you. Ms. Notenaris, are there any late changes to the agenda?
We do have one late change. We'd like to move the cemetery board appointments to right after public comment.
Great. Thank you very much. Now we'll move on to public comment. Anyone wishing to speak to the council, please step to the podium, state your name and the city you live in. Please try to keep your comments to 3 minutes.
Mr. Mayor, council members, staff, I'm Roy Garrison, 1186 South 30th Place, and I'm here to comment about an item that's on the agenda later in the meeting, and it would be the naming of the park out at Horns Corner. I've been around since day one, some of you think, but Horns Corner, I've heard there's several different names floating around here. Horns Corner was developed by the Horn family from the days of donation land claim, when the Horn family come out there and they owned a hell of a lot of land out there. There was a Horns Corner store, there was a Horns Corner school just north of the store, and I think the school district still got about, it's not a very big piece, but it was enough for the kids to go to school, and old George, he wanted the kids to go to school, so. And in them days, the road didn't come in like it comes in now. You had to go way the hell out around places to get to Ridgefield. Anyway, at the store there, when the Horns Corner store was there, it was on the northeast corner of Pine Air and Royal Road. They had an old gas pump with glass in it, and as a kid, I'd go up there. My dad, if we got to come to Ridgefield, if once in a while he'd come, mainly get a jug of moonshine. And you could stop there, because there's one of the Horn boys knew how to make moonshine. And you stop there, and he'd always get a little glass, or gas. And I get, well, it come in a glass, come in a quart fruit jar, to be right honest. But I get to hang on to that handle with him, because I was only about 6'7", because I couldn't reach up there at the top while he pumped up, got 5 gallons in the tube, and then it drained down gravity into the tank. I would certainly like to recommend that you keep the park itself that is being established there as Horns Corner Park, because I think the history there, because they owned that whole damn thing there, clear over to Royals at one time, you know, and to the old Wells place and stuff, you know. So there's, I think it'd be great if you could keep that Horns Corner Park, and I hope you consider that time to get around to changing things.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I have a question. Did they? Did your dad offer you a little glass or gas?
No, we didn't get offered that.
Anyone else wishing to speak to the council?
Norman Farrell from Ridgefield, and I'm sorry, I don't have any moonshine stories to relate. I represent the Ridgefield Community Gleaners Association. We're a very tiny nonprofit for the benefit of new council and staff members. Our focus is to provide fresh produce to the Ridgefield Family Resource Center throughout the year. And I just want to give a very quick update on our activities over the past 12 months. We've collected over 2,000 pounds of fresh produce from over a dozen local gardens and orchards, in conjunction also with some monthly pickups from Compassion 360, and all of that went to the Family Resource Center. We also passed along some extra produce this year for the first time to Neighbors Helping Neighbors and the Clark County Food Bank. If anyone wants to know how much kale you can fit in the back of a Subaru Outback, it's 180 pounds of kale. We purchased over two tons of fresh produce with cash donations. We delivered all of that to the Family Resource Center. We do that a weekly delivery to them every week throughout the year. Our cash donations totaled over $4,800 this past year, including a $750 grant from the Walmart in Woodland. And a quick shout out to, I don't think they're here, but to Sandy and Dion for their help in alerting us to the possibility of that grant and helping us get that. We're also working with Rose Hours to begin, hopefully next week, sourcing our fresh produce for the weekly contributions to the Family Resource Center. For 2020, we hope to increase our grant funding to participate in community events and programs so we can raise community awareness of both what we're doing and especially of the need for fresh produce for families in the Ridgefield area. And we hope to keep pace with the produce needs of the Family Resource Center. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, Mr. Ralph, but Mr. Mayor, I'd like to make a comment. How many are in your Ridgefield Gleaners Association? Seven. They do a tremendous amount, and we ought to be very thankful to them for all of the work that they do. They go all over. They even come to the community garden that we have here in Ridgefield and pick the apples off the trees next door. But it is wonderful the amount of work that you do, and thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Anyone else wishing to speak to the council? Sir.
My name is Clarence Thomas. I'm the president of Columbia Hills Homeowners Association. And I wanted to find out about the stormwater system where they tied in from that commercial building, that building site up there off of Sevier and Hillhurst. I know, looking back at some of the documents that we have through the Columbia Hills PUD, it was turned over to us in 2008, but the city says it's a commercial stormwater system. How can that be when it's, I maintain it, we as Columbia Hills, we maintain it. So was for someone else to tie into our stormwater system, that cuts our life down on the storm system. And I have a couple of documents here, or at least drawings of showing the development of the land when it was documented and everything. And I don't understand why we get tied into, especially when that land was up for a business here a while back, and now it's being developed again, but they've already tied into our stormwater system, and we don't get anything out of it. I mean, it's going to kill our stormwater system, and the amount of money we're going to have to put back into it's going to just drain us. So I want to find out what the city wants to do about it.
Okay, absolutely. Then we'll put you in contact with our Public Works Department, and they can help you with that.
Okay. I'd appreciate it.
Thank you very
Thanks.
Much. Anyone else wishing to speak to the council? Anyone else wishing to speak to the council? With that, we'll move on. I would accept a motion for the consent agenda.
Mayor, I move that we accept the consent agenda as
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda as presented. Any questions, council? All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Passes. Thank you very much. We'll move on to a presentation for the 2020 Planning Commission Work Program. Mr. Patrick Flynn.
Mr. Mayor, I think we wanted to do the cemetery board appointments.
I'm so sorry. Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Sorry about that.
Thank you for reminding me. Council, we are going to bring forward to you the cemetery board, which has been on hiatus for several years. And so we have, we sent out a request for applications and we received several. And so this evening we have before us three folks that I've met with and spent some time with. And I would like them, as I call their name, to please step to the podium. For position one, Sue Farkish. Sue is here. For position two, Cynthia Mumford. Cynthia is here. And for position three, Claudia Schobert. Claudia wasn't able to make it. Okay, no problem. Okay, gotcha. All right, thank you. So, council, I would accept a motion. We can do one motion for all three positions, please.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we appoint to the Cemetery Board Sue Varkish, Cynthia Mumford, and Claudia Schoberg.
I'll second it.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to appoint to the Cemetery Board, position one, Sue Varkish, position two, Cynthia Mumford, and position three, Claudia Schoberg.
Mr. Mayor, what are the terms on that other settlement on this?
The terms are for Sue Varkish for position one is a 3-year term expiring on 2022, position two expiring on 2021, and position three expiring on 2020. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. Thank you, ladies.
I'd love to hear from you. If you have anything to say
tonight? We look forward to serving. We look forward to the promised packet of information for us to begin our learning on this process.
Thank you very much. Next, we'll move on to a presentation for the 2020 Planning Commission. Mr. Patrick Flynn.
I'll leave that alone. Thank you to the staff and to the City Council for having me. My name is Patrick Flynn. I'm the chair of the Planning Commission. I'm here to present the 2020 Planning Commission work program. Unfortunately, I do not have glasses with me, so I'll say a lot of this is ongoing, but towards the top, I really can't see a thing. Towards the top of the code update, a lot of that we're actually voting on this next meeting. And then below that, you can see there's the HOA requirements and the parking changes. Those were two items that were added by the Planning Commission last year in order to study this year, as well as the affordable housing down towards the bottom that was also added by the Planning Commission to study and work on this coming year. But almost everything else is carryover.
Okay.
There you go.
All right. Questions of Mr. Flynn, Council?
I have a question. Hi, Patrick.
Of course you do.
Well, I know that when I was on the Planning Commission with you, you and I had some talks about that big document that was issued, the Affordable Housing Memorandum by the Department of Commerce. So I am hoping that you guys will study the RM1 through RM, I think it's 38, and see what of those items, maybe some of them could apply to the city of Ridgefield, and just do a study on that and see where we're at. There's a lot of good ideas in that document. It's rather lengthy, as you know. I think
yes.
It's over 150 pages or so. But
I believe it's 167 pages.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember our conversations, and that is it's an important issue that needs to be explored in Ridgefield and other places, I'm sure, as well. And it's going to take quite a bit of time to work through not just that material, but all the other guidebooks and suggestions that are available on the topic.
Thank you for your service.
I have a question on that. Are you referring to affordable housing? The AWC has quite a bit of information on that. Do you receive any of that from them?
I do not know.
Okay, I will make sure that you do. And the other question I had was, develop a sub-area plan for the Carty Road. And are we talking about the area that we've been talking about in the past where there's been some requests for annexation in that area just south of or east of Hillhurst? Is that what you're talking about?
No, I don't believe so, no.
Well, it says develop a sub-area plan for the Carty Road annexation area. So you, that is on our agenda, right?
Mayor and Council, this is the work plan for 2020. The sub-area plan has already been approved. It's under works right now. the consultant is going through the stakeholder interview process.
Okay.
It's carryover from last year.
All right.
It's not relating to the affordable housing.
I didn't know whether there was, since it was on this, I didn't know whether it was an additional plan or what.
So. No, it was carryover from 2019.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Any other questions, Council? All right. Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you.
Next, we have a presentation, the 2020 Parks Board Work Program. Kim Stenbatt. Kim's here. Hi, Kim.
Hello. Thanks for having me here. I love public speaking. So we are here to present our 2020 work plan. Our goal this year is to be a bit more intentional and strategic and see some fewer items accomplished, but at the end of the year, see some things done, some tasks completed. So a couple things on our agenda is the Nature Play Park down at Abrams. We really want to get that ball rolling. The Refuge Park, which is up by the dog park area. So there's some land on both sides of the dog park. We would like to get some ideas and some plans to develop that space. The Overlook Park Annex, which is the behind the stage Overlook Park. The Boyce property was recently purchased, and that's over off Smythe Road, so there's some good ideas for there.
What was that one?
Off Smythe, 32nd,
okay.
Kind of back in the corner.
Okay, back
there.
On,
yeah.
on the north side.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah. It's on the left side when I drove down the road. If that's north, that works. and then there's been some discussion about the skate park in town and possibly finding a new location that is able to have some permanent features as opposed to the temporary features that are there based on the grant requirements. Our goal is also to set some design standards for trails so people know when they're on a city trail, and also some design standards for parks. Some parks are HOA owned, some parks are city parks. If we have consistent signage, then people can know whether they're in a, you know, we kind of can set some expectations for people when they go to the parks. Another thing we want to do is some of the new parks that are being put in town, we want to start recognizing those families that have either homesteaded or owned or donated that land. And so instead of saying we're going to do all of them, we're trying to pick like one or two this year that we can really focus on. In addition to that, with the trail connections and linkages, there's lots of trail pieces that are missing around the city, and our goal is to use the new updated plan to select one or two that we can really focus our volunteer efforts and try to see some accomplishment as opposed to saying we're going to work on trails and linkages. So just being a little bit more specific and intentional. So as far as that strategic planning and goals, the non-motorized boat launch from Mill down to Lake River, there has been a preliminary plan set up for that. So we want to review that and then collaborate with some outside organizations to potentially see some development there. Speaking of collaboration, we want to continue working with the school district. The Garden Club, we're currently in communication with them regarding Eagles View Park and getting some new plantings in there. We've been working with Harper's Playground to make sure that our playgrounds in the city are accessible and inclusive to all. Working with the Port and the National Wildlife Refuge as well. And along with Main Street, the Chamber, and then we're continuing to do more citizen outreach. So last year we went to Experience Ridgefield. We had a couple outreach days in Davis Park, down at National Night Out. So this year we're hoping to have a table out at the Big Paddle to get more input from the community, possibly up at the dog park to see again what are some features that people would like to see, and then hopefully making ourselves more present at some of the first Saturdays. And just really trying to get information from the public so we can make the parks what they want them to be. And we like to continue to work on potential property acquisition for parks and trails with the city. So We hope to, again, do a tour with the city staff and council to see some of the parks and the properties that have been purchased and are in need of development, and just kind of be ahead of the game on how can we have a variety of parks in town instead of just doing the same old play sets and whatnot. So just being intentional on staying informed on what's out there and whatnot. So that's about it.
Thank you, Kim. Any questions?
I do have a question. So you mentioned Harper's Playground.
Yep.
Are you working, I guess, probably on the park that's going in by the Acero Apartments?
We have not, like, officially started talking about exactly the play set. I know there's going to be a play set in there.
Okay.
And so one of our board members went to a 2 to 3 day workshop with Harper's Playground, and they were able to go tour some of the parks and get some good ideas on how we can start making our newer playgrounds coming in
have a little bit more
accessibility
features. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So that's definitely on the agenda
for that particular
park, given that there's going to be a lot of people coming in and out of there because of the apartments, because people go into the grocery store and running across the street to play. So we want to, you know, that's a good starting place.
I think that's great.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you.
There's a couple of things that I just wanted to point out, and I think you guys are doing a fabulous job. I just love what we're doing in parks and want to encourage you to continue to do all that you're doing already. One of them that comes up, and I say it now so that I can not forget, and that is on the skate park, some of that was, or most of that was paid for through CDBG funds. So there are some caveats that you'll have to address before we move that. The other one is that Sandra Day can probably help you on the boat launch. I know that through the Big Paddle, that was going to be redeveloped for some kayak launching, and then it fell by the wayside. So that is, she and I are part of that, so that is important that they did have, or they thought they had the money. Is that not correct?
That is correct. They thought they had the money.
And so we need to address that. And the other thing is the nature park, and that's on me, and I will get with you on that ASAP.
Okay. Looking forward to it. And we also have a new volunteer sign up, and it was on Wednesdays, the same days we had the Parks Board, so every second Wednesday from like 9 to 12. And a lot of feedback from the community was people just couldn't make it at that time. So now we're going to try to do like more quarterly and have it like maybe on a Saturday or in an evening. So there's more people who would go volunteer but just couldn't work that time. So with some of these projects, because they are a little bit more intentional and specific, we're able to say on this day, come to this place, you know, and we can really see some stuff get done. So it's kind of the goal.
Cool.
Yep.
Thank you, Kim.
You're welcome.
Great job. Moving on to our first order of business, first reading of ordinance number 1310, traffic impact fee update. Mr. Cast.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and good evening, Council. So before you this evening is an ordinance relating to our traffic impact fee calculation, and really this ordinance has two main purposes. One, it removes the TIF list from the comprehensive plan, where there was an action that was taken a few meetings back that actually pulled it from the comprehensive plan, and then this will separately establish that list via ordinance so that we're able to more easily update that list and have more flexibility without being tied to only a once per year comprehensive plan update. And then second, the proposal here will adjust the TIF rate for some projects. So the issue that we were trying to address here with this change was the basic need is that we have a need to construct improvements on our city's main roadways, primarily Pioneer Street, Hillhurst, and especially Royal Road. And we need to be able to do those improvements in a quick manner and a cost-effective manner, and maybe even more quickly than the way we've been doing it previously with little chunks getting developed as the adjacent development occurs, with gaps then between improved sections. Developers, as we've seen, can complete this work faster and more cost-effectively than the city can. However, they're not going to build require improvements that are not required as a condition of their development unless the they're getting full cost reimbursement. They're not going to lose money on the deal. So the solution that staff is presenting to council tonight is to raise the TIF amounts on and focus those TIF amounts on some key projects. The goal was to maintain the current TIF rate, and as a result of that and the increase to the TIF rate on some of the key projects, some projects that were previously above the line that we drew at our last update in 2018 now fall below the line. And I want to point out too that I was made aware this afternoon, or this morning, excuse me, that there was a typo in the staff report. The proposal is that the TIF rate remains at the indexed 2020 amount that was approved with the fee schedule, and that the rate does not change. The other purpose or benefit, I guess, of concentrating the funds on these select projects is now, as those projects are on that focused list are completed, that they will be removed from the list and additional projects then can move up above the line. So if you recall back in the last time that we talked TIF rates, we had a fairly lengthy process of looking at the TIF list, and before that meeting we had basically almost every project had some sort of TIF eligibility, and our TIF program was not fully funded, meaning that the TIF rate that we were charging was not supporting all of those projects. So we made we spent quite a bit of time talking back and forth, I think it was December of 2018, and focusing that list and ranking projects. With this update, the ranking order does not change. The for the most part, the overall project cost and the private chairs do not change. The only thing that we really are looking at changing here is that TIF rate, as well as the public share, and I'll get into a little bit more of the methodology here on how we made those adjustments in a second.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. So, Julie, can you pull up that PDF? So with this update, only the projects that have highlighted in yellow here were updated. So those again are Pioneer Street, Royal Road, and Hillhurst. And so what we did is took a look at the project funding shares, which are in general, there's a public share, there's a TIF share, and there's a private share. And then on some projects, there's also a grant share, but we won't focus on that right now. So as I mentioned, the private share remained the same. So we're not asking for any additional money from developers out of pocket with this change. The public share, was amended to reflect the costs that would be necessary to take the existing road and the pavement that is deficient on those existing roads and replace that pavement at the given existing width back to a 100% or perfect pavement condition index. So that in turn reduced our public share in pretty much all cases. That extra public share then was transferred over to the TIF. If you recall, state law prohibits TIF from being used to address existing deficiencies. It can only be used for capacity increase. And so the methodology, again, was that the existing deficiency is basically that the roads are falling apart at their existing width. And so we basically transferred some additional funds from that public side over to that TIF side to allow for one additional TIF money from the money that we're collecting from all developers to go towards those projects. And then secondarily, if developers are completing those projects, that increases the amount of TIF credits that they can receive for completing that work. The only project that had an adjustment to the overall project cost, and Julie, if you can scroll just a hair to the right, was Royal Road. In our most recent list, the costs for overall project costs for both segments of Royal Road, keep going a little bit more. And those two highlighted yellow amounts there were updated. The previous lists was compared, the previous project cost we compared to the costs that were estimated by the 90% design that was completed. And so we updated these costs to better reflect the actual design costs that have been estimated for the project. So again, sort of to summarize the change, that was a lot of information dumped on you pretty quickly there. But the key is to focus our TIF share and our TIF money on these key projects. As I mentioned earlier, by increasing that TIF amount and the desire to maintain our TIF rate at the same amount, some projects did come off the list. So those projects highlighted in red were ones, are projects that were previously TIF eligible and based on this updated model would not be TIF eligible. But again, as projects are completed on that list, they will come off the list and those other projects will work their way up. So with that, I am happy to answer any questions from the council. Thank you.
So this is the priority list?
Yes, so this is the exact same list that the council saw back in December 2018. Again, the projects were ranked from one to, I'm not quite sure how many, there's quite a few of them on here. And that ranking, as with this update, we're not, staff is not proposing to change the rankings, so switch places with any of those projects, essentially. Again, the only change is really reducing that public share to better reflect the, you know, the actual costs of the deficiency of the pavement, and then transferring the remainder of those costs over to be TIF eligible.
Are you pretty much your policy or the way you want to do it determined by what state law says? Is that why, I just wondered why we weren't in this type before?
I think back before the 2018 update, we had a very broad TIF list. And then with 2018, the goal was to kind of focus that list down a little bit more and make sure that we're fully funding key projects. And with this update, we're kind of further focusing to make sure that those super key projects, you know, basically the main arterials of our city, have adequate TIF funding so that we can work with developers to be able to construct those improvements. And
okay, well, that makes sense. The other question I have is the reddish, what does that mean?
So those are projects that were, based on the 2018 update, were previously TIF eligible, but now with the proposed changes here and the additional TIF eligibility for those projects highlighted in yellow, and again, the desire to not raise the TIF rate beyond the 2020 adopted rate, those projects would be not TIF eligible until other projects that are above that dark line there are completed.
Or if they are not TIF eligible, are those more projects that we can handle as a city?
Potentially. I think the goal is really to just start getting some projects done and off this list so that we can work our way down. And I guess the other piece, and I think I briefly mentioned it earlier, but we now, by adopting this TIF list via ordinance, we're able to come back at any time to the council, and council can reprioritize projects or adjust that. Previously, we were limited to only being able to do that once per year with the comprehensive plan update. So,
okay. Thank you. It really needs to be done. I don't know how you've been able to fight off all the complaints and whatever and to try to get to a position where we can handle that. But, you know, kudos to you. Thank you.
Ryan, I had a question. So the seven items that are in yellow, once
yes.
those are done, how many of the items in the reddish color can move up? Is it based on how much money each project is?
That's correct. So Julie, if you can scroll all the way over to the very far right side of that spreadsheet. So there's that column there that says cumulative TIF. And so that basically is sort of a running sum of that TIF share column.
Okay.
For every project above, you know, that line. So the first one, you know, there's a $1.7 million TIF share, so the cumulative TIF is 1.7, and then as you go down to the next line, it's 1.7 plus the next project, and so on and so forth. So it really depends on how large that TIF share is. Obviously,
mm-hmm.
Pioneer has some fairly large TIF shares, and then Royal Road in particular has some large TIF shares. And so as those projects are completed, that amount will then come off the TIF list and free up that amount for other projects to come up, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and then you pick the most deteriorated road to put that one up? first?
In general, I would say that we're trying to pick the highest traffic roads or the ones that are critical to the transportation system. You know, there could be projects that are, you know, highly deteriorated, but they're, say, like a local road. For example, my road, Riverview Drive, is, you know, a pavement in condition index, I think, of 40 or something, but, you know, it's a dead end. So it's not really a key road for the transportation system. So we're really focusing this TIF list in particular on roads that everyone in the whole city needs to use to be able to get around.
Councilor Lindsay, you had a question?
I did. So in the red are the ones that were on the list and now are not.
Correct.
Now, if I am interpreting them correctly, lots of them are over on the east side of the freeway, correct? Over by Union Ridge Parkway, and where a lot of the development is now occurring with the Hinton and Boschman Farms, correct? Are these, now those projects are gonna be important as we move forward and that builds out. Are these projects that we might potentially be able to get grant assistance for so that they don't get, so we can maybe get ahead of the game on some of those?
Yes, and as you, I'm sure, are aware, we have been seeking some grants, for example, yeah, the Pioneer Street Extension. So yes, to answer your question.
If they're TIF eligible, if projects are TIF eligible, are they also grant eligible, or does that affect their eligibility?
They're unrelated, so you can, whether the project's TIF eligible or not does not impact the ability to apply for grants.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Cass, question. So by having it above the line for a TIF share, that incentivizes the developer or the property owner to do the improvements themselves because they get a TIF credit?
Yes, so if a developer completes either an entire project or a portion of a project that is on the, is a yes on TIF eligibility, then they can submit to the city engineer their costs, and we will review that and compare that to the eligible amount, and they can receive up to that eligible amount in credits back to compensate them for that work. So the results of that are twofold. One, by having projects that are TIF eligible, we're sort of, you know, focusing where we want to see development, you know, occur, or sort of incentivize those areas. And then secondarily, for example, on the grocery store parcel, when Discovery Ridge was built, not only did they improve what their half of the road directly in front of their project that they were required to, they also improved the opposite side of the road and south of their project, which they weren't required to do. And again, you know, the desire and the goal here is to be able to, if people go in above and beyond like that, if developers go above and beyond, to be able to, have them recoup that their costs so that they're not out of pocket for doing work that they're not required to do.
Thank you.
I have another question, or a couple of them, and that is, for example, I know we need the Royal Road south of Rose Hours is really, really challenged. I guess that's a nice word for it.
That's a nice way to say it.
But at the same time, I hesitate to say I would love to see you fix it when we've got so much construction going on. So does that come into play where you say, okay, let's let it go to hell? Let's let it go bad before we redo the whole thing and do the whole thing after all the construction is gone through?
No, I mean, in some really sense, possible. There's a little bit of overlap between the TIF program and then the pavement maintenance program that we've talked about in the past. The main overlap, again, is that we were trying to use those pavement restoration costs to figure out what our public share was, what our existing deficiency was. So I guess
it seems like it is almost foolish, you think, I don't know, maybe it isn't, but it seems almost foolish to go ahead and put a brand new road in when we're going to be building a tremendous amount of houses and other roads where there's going to be a tremendous amount of heavy truck traffic.
Potentially, but I guess the, you know, I would counter with the, when you have a nice new road with appropriately designed pavement section, which we don't have on Railroad right now, I'll say, you know, they won't be impacted by truck traffic like Royal Road currently is being. You know, Royal Road right now, as it exists, is, you know, many layers of, you know, chip seal or oil mat over river rock, essentially. And so if you replace that with the arterial or minor arterial cross-section of, you know, 12 inches of rock and 5 to 6 inches of asphalt, you know, it's going to shrug off that additional truck traffic.
Okay.
Essentially, I mean, the concept, I think the best way to explain the concept is that the projects that you want to see sort of on the six-year priority or the priority projects, you want to make TIF eligible, and then the remainder is the 20-year plan.
But if we should happen to see something down there in a red that really jumps out at us, we can move it up on the list.
That's correct, and again, one of the goals behind moving it out of the comprehensive plan and into its own ordinance is that we can now come back and do that whenever we want to, so we have better flexibility.
Thank you. The yellow projects, obviously they're not on the 20-year plan to get completed. Would you like to see them, what kind of time frame in a perfect world?
I guess going back to sort of what Mr. Wells was asking too, I mean, I would say that everything sort of above that black line is sort of the six-year plan.
Okay.
And the higher up they are towards the top, the sooner in that six-year period our goal is to complete them.
Okay. Thank you.
And if I could just add a small sort of procedural and clerical error here. The title of the ordinance does also reflect some minor changes to Title 18070, which is your TIF chapter, and those were inadvertently omitted. So in the second reading of the ordinance that's going to come back, you will have an additional section, and you'll see those changes in red line. They're very minor changes, just making reference to this new TIF list instead of the comprehensive plan list. So my apologies for not having that that section in this draft, but it will be in your next one. It is in the title, and it is intended to be a part of these changes.
Thank you, Ms. Parker. Ms. Julie, could you read the ordinance into the record, please?
Ordinance number 1310, ordinance of the City of Richfield, Washington, related to traffic impact fees, amending Chapter 18.070 of the Richfield Municipal Code and adopting the traffic impact fee project list.
Thank you. This is the first reading. I'll come back to us in 2 weeks. Next order of business is the second reading of ordinance number 1309. Gress property mixed use overlay removal. Ms. Garbo.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Just a quick recap. Over the course of the last few months, Council took action on the subject property shown on the slide up here. Council annexed the property, did the comp plan amendment, and also did a zone change to allow the eastern portion of the property to become to be commercial. And we brought the request before you tonight for second reading to change the sub-area plans that the subject property located, both in the Pioneer and 45th sub-area plan, as well as the G Creek sub-area plan, and just to remove the overlay so that it's consistent with the council's action.
Thank you. Council questions? Ms. Garbo? Julie, could you read the ordinance into the record, please?
Thank you, Mayor. Ordinance 1309, ordinance of the City of Richfield, Washington, related to land use and amending the official zoning map, amending ordinance number 1203 and 1252, amending zoning overlay of the assessor's parcel number 21378400 and adjacent right-of-way.
Thank you. I would accept a motion.
So, Mayor, I move that we accept ordinance number 1309 as presented.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to adopt ordinance number 1309 as presented. Any questions or comments, Council? Ms. Julie, could you call the roll, please?
Councilmember Onslow?
Aye.
Councilmember Zimmer?
Aye.
Councilmember Wells?
Aye.
Councilmember Akeley?
Aye.
Councilmember Lindsay?
Aye.
Councilmember Day?
Aye.
Mayor Stoss?
Yes. Thank you very much. Next order of business is a motion approval of Kempor Grove Phase 1 final plat. Ms. Garbo.
Thank you again, Mayor and Council. The final plat before you tonight, it's located in the vicinity map shown before you on the slide up here. And this is a closer look at the subject property. This is part of the Kempor Grove PUD that was approved by the hearing examiner back in February of 2019. And phase one is the final plat before you tonight. And this map sort of show you the two different zonings on the entire property. And phase one is largely RMD 16. The property is approximately 4 acres. And the final plat is for 32 single-family attached residential lots. And the lot sizes range from 2,500 to 3,975 square feet, with the average lot size to be 2,740 square feet. And the subject site would be served by Pioneer Canyon Drive and North 30th Drive. Both are public streets. And phase one contains one storm facility in track C and two open space tracks, and all to be owned by the HOA and maintained by the HOA. Track A is approximately 0.83 acres, located at the southeast portion of the site. It also contained wetland to further eastern portion of the track. And track B is approximately 0.37 acres, and track B is largely a natural estate. And the slide before you shows the entire proposal where the trail is being proposed, and it shows how it connects to phase one. Phase five serves as the main facility, which is the upper right, top right corner, under the hearing examiner decision for the entire PUD. The proposed phase one, having said that, met all the open space requirement as a standalone phase. And the final plat is consistent with the final order and the Richfield comp plan, as well as the city development standards. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Council questions of Ms. Garbo?
I have a question. So it looks like, 32nd Avenue that runs currently into Smythe Road? Right. So is that going to become a dead end road? And then, because it looks like there's reconfigurations of roads once the all gets phased out. So will 32nd, do you see what I'm talking about when you look at the map?
I think I can answer that question. So yeah, there is some reconfigurations of road with the ultimate build out of this proposed plan here. So the big one of those being that Smythe Road is realigned. The intersection is right now is sort of a oblique angle, mm-hmm. and it's hard to make that corner. And so that would be reconfigured to be a normal perpendicular intersection. As you recall, the long-term goal for Smythe Road is to make it into the existing roadway surface into a trail.
Right.
And the remainder of that road would then be no longer used for traffic and able to be used for a trail. So, yes.
It looks like 30th will become the access point.
Correct.
And
yes, that's correct. So 30th would be the main access, and then you're correct, 32nd, at least temporarily, would be probably a dead end. Ultimately, the plan probably would be to extend that south all the way to Pioneer when that parcel the south develops, and it would be probably limited to right in, right out.
Right in, right out. Okay. When we might think that configuration would come into play, like what part of the phase, when in the phasing when that would get
done? I think that's part of phase two.
Okay. Thank you.
Just a question, does that trail dead end at the street?
You're talking the one that's located on the existing Smythe Road alignment that sort of points towards Pioneer Street there?
The green one? Does it just end at that?
So it just follows the existing Smythe Road alignment. There, I think we've been working with the developer and we'll continue to with phase two to that Smythe Road connection needs to continue to extend to the west along the rest of Smythe Road.
So we will have a connection?
So if you can, is your pointer working? Okay, we don't have a laser, I guess. So. But anyway, that segment that kind of stubs down south towards Pioneer, I think ultimately will become a crossing that kind of connects into the segment of trail that continues to the west there, if that makes sense.
I'm not sure, but I guess as long as we can connect them, that's the most important thing.
I can go point at the map if you'd like.
Okay.
But I won't be on mic, so.
Okay. And up north or whatever, top, is that dead end at that street? Okay. All right.
Brian, I have a quick question on the trail. The old Smythe Road, which will become the trail, like you were saying, what does that mean that the asphalt will stay there and people will walk on that?
That's correct.
Okay. So if there's any sort of potholes in it, those would kind of get remedied?
With the segment adjacent to the 32nd roundabout, we went in there, cleaned up that pavement, and then did a slurry seal, I believe, on it to kind of help preserve the pavement. Obviously, it'll last a lot better without heavy traffic loads on it. So.
Thank you.
I do have another question. So that trail section that's running parallel and west along Pioneer, is the vision that that's going to be your an alternative to pedestrian traffic directly on Pioneer Street?
That's correct. So that segment there that you can see that connects off to the west is a segment of that Smythe Road trail. That was a big part of this PUD, was getting the developer to construct that first segment west of the existing segment.
That's off of phase two there?
That's correct. And then the final phase of that would be working with the remaining one or two property owners farther to the west so that we can connect that down to Reman and Haskell Trail.
And what kind of standard is that trail going to be? It's going to be like a paved trail, right? It's not
going to
be like a gravel
I believe it's a type 1 trail, which is 10 to 12 foot paved.
Okay. So it should be able to handle quite a bit of pedestrian traffic. All right. Thank you.
Any other questions, Council? I would accept a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I move to approve the final plat as presented.
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the Kemper Grove Phase 1 final plat. Questions, Council? All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Passes. Thank you, Council. Moving on to a motion of approval of the crossing final plat, Ms. Garbo.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. We already presented to you at the last meeting on this residential subdivision as shown on the map up here at the top right-hand corner. And this is the close-up and it shows the open space area. At the last meeting, Council has questioned about the overall trail system for the master plan. So the applicant provided this map for us to show Council. They are connected outside the critical area through sidewalk and trails. Be happy to answer any questions. Oh, Brian.
Questions, Council?
I have a comment about this, and I had some questions about this when it came up at the last meeting about how we have this awesome green space and how much trail access we were gonna have around it. When I got this, I had in my head that we would have more access for the public, the trails adjacent directly to the green space. And when I saw this, I had, it's not, there wasn't as much adjacent trails as I was hoping for. Is that something that we can have in the future as a standard about where the trail placement is, especially when we have these large centralized green belts, so they are accessible to the public? Just so, like, I mean, I guess having a sidewalk and trails is great, but when you have like a building, and then you've got your like sidewalk, a building, and then you've got the nature on the other side, you're not. Do you see what I'm saying? It's just not as much as close to the wetlands as.
Mayor and Council, we can certainly look into that as far as the standard for trails. I can certainly work with Mr. Cass to ensure that I understand what your comment is. Mm-hmm. For this project, it was approved before my time, but it's my understanding that, as you can see, the critical area took quite a big chunk of the property. And the land use decision, even before this master plan, requires the critical area to be fenced off. Mm-hmm. So it gives very limited room for development. Mm-hmm. And because of the critical area, the site actually is far exceeding the 25% open space requirement. And the developer at the time was allowed to utilize existing sidewalk and trail to make their connections.
And I guess I'd chime in there a little bit too. I mean, in general, for larger system trails, we do map out those general routes as a part of our Parks and Rec comprehensive plan, which is currently in the final stages of being updated and will be before you next month, or I guess March, not quite next month, 2 months. But these smaller sort of local trails, especially ones that are below our trail standards, like for example, our trail standards for public trails, we don't allow soft surface bark trails, which is what's proposed here in the buffer. That's what you have to put in wetland buffers. And so something that we can potentially do is work either with council or parks board as we have additional as we have developments that are proposing, you know, trails or smaller parks, to take those to the parks board and get feedback. And that's something that we've been doing some, but we can make sure that that's continues to be a focus, so that the board can weigh in on how the local trails that aren't already mapped out, that kind of are designed as the project themselves comes forward, that makes sure those are meeting the city's intent.
I kind of had in my head like how Pioneer Canyon is with that large centralized wetland, and how it dips in and around, not necessarily encircling the entire area, but just portions of it. I was thinking that this was going to be more like that, and then so on. That's my train of thought. So thank you.
Quick question. Ms. Garbo, you mentioned that there was going to be a fence around, or fencing around wetlands, so
there
this
is.
Whole area will have a fence around?
Mayor and Council, I believe it's already constructed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think that's what the problem is, and that's where my question came up, is that that fence is already there. It was put in years ago.
Yeah, it's
and
been
my
there for...
question to you, Brian, or to Councilor Lee, is that all wet in there that you can't go in it? Or is that something that trails can be developed so that you could utilize that area? Because it's a fairly large area. Yeah, even boardwalks or a chip, I mean, a bark chips or something. But I don't know, how wet is it in there? Do you know?
It was critical land area, and Department of Ecology and that had it fenced off. Mr. Sato was the one that owned the property at that time when they had it delineated, and he went ahead and put the fences in the critical areas. But I don't know, I guess staff would probably have the answer to that, whether that could be crossed with a boardwalk or something so you could utilize the area without trespassing on it.
Yeah, I would say in general, you know, being a designated critical area, you're fairly limited in what you can do. There are potentially, though, some crossings and some treatments, like, for example, a boardwalk that are placed on a specific type of pier that, you know, may not trigger mitigation. Any other sort of trail, though, or fill or crossing potentially would trigger mitigation.
And I'll just kind of chime in here that this is already a vested project, so I mean, we could work with them for voluntary issues, but in terms of requiring that in an existing vested development, we wouldn't be able to do that.
Well, it seems a shame that we have a fenced area that's really pretty nice, but we can't get in it. And I understand that the housing goes up to it, so we can't even put a trail around the outside of the entire complex because of the fence that's there. But there ought to be some way in the future that we can solve that problem.
And that's kind of what my point was, is like maybe if we can look at this as an example of something that's happened and have some code or recommendations going forward, because we've got a lot of wet areas around Richfield. It might pop up again.
I know that up in Olympia, where they have some of the wetlands that they have, I don't know, they probably have been able to get permission or whatever, but they put dike-type things in and boardwalks that are going across wetlands that are able to use it. And there's a lot of wildlife in there, and people just walk through. It seems to work really well. Anyway.
Okay, well, any other questions or comments?
As I recall, it was quite a while back that the developer came to us and asked to use the existing fence instead of constructing a new one. So when we took that action to leave the existing fence, I believe, on the property instead of having to put new in, we kind of sealed our own fate there. That was the time to discuss it. So I think, as our legal advisor said, we've kind of moved beyond that with the critical area and acknowledging it exists. So when this comes before us again, we ought to really look at things like this and trails.
Is there a maintenance of an area like that, or no? Does it just grow?
I think the main maintenance is controlling and removing any sort of invasive plants that establish themselves, Himalayan blackberry, scotch broom, the like.
Who does that?
Well, I believe in this case, since the green space is being retained by the developer, that it would be, it's the property owner, so.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, we've got two people in the audience, an engineer and a developer, that may be able to shed a little light on the trail, that if it's okay by the council.
You guys want to hear some more about this, or are we good?
I'd like to hear it.
Yeah. Scott?
Good evening, council. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to help shed some light on the history and what's going on here.
Do you want to just give us your name and position for the record, please?
My name is Scott Taylor. I'm a landscape architect and planner with SGA Engineering. So we're the engineers, and I was a landscape architect and planner that worked on this project and quite a few Richfield projects over the years. So I think a good opportunity here would be to work with, don't want to mess up the name, to work with Kim, and I had actually already gave her my information earlier today about some of these missing trail connections in town and the park that's going in over by the apartments and the grocery store, and trying to help you guys out with that. On this project, there's quite the history, and you guys touched on some of that. In 2002, there was a core permit with the old developer that they fenced off the critical wetlands and the biggest parts of the wetland and the most important. There were some little pieces of wetland that were filled in as part of a core permit, and that all was approved by the core and then enacted they watch out for that for 10 years. And after that, the permit is sort of wrapped up and done. And so that's where this project was when we picked it up with Hinton and started into this master plan. And so, yes, in the Corps and Ecology's eyes, they don't want us to touch anything inside of the fence. That being said, your guys' parks program and other programs could look to access that wetland in the future. It is privately owned, will be, and maintained by the quote-unquote HOA of this whole area. And so it's not all completely wet. It's definitely a dynamic area that changes over the years, and some areas are wetter than others. You can do boardwalks and other types of access that do not trigger core permits because the piers that the boardwalk sits on are not considered a wetland fill. And so that's a great opportunity that you guys could put a trail across this or into it. I wanted to point out on the map, there's a number of spots where the trail is directly adjacent to the wetland. And so on the west side of the project, there's sort of two lobes that look like ears sort of in the commercial part. Those are behind the buildings, adjacent to the wetland, and adjacent to another open space track that'll be improved. There's also a stormwater facility in that commercial phase one, which is already a recorded plat. So those will all be adjacent, you know, so you can walk and look at the beautiful wetland that is there. And it has grown up quite well since the early 2000s. On the east side, there's a darker trail that is part of phase B, and you guys will see that plat in the future. That one is a wood chip trail that is directly adjacent to the wetland. And then on the very south side and the very north sides of the project, there's a public sidewalk that's going to be built in the right-of-way, and that will also be directly adjacent to the wetland. And so at sort of all four corners of this 14.5-acre wetland complex, there are existing gates in the chain link fence. So those could be utilized for access in the future, possibly for public or educational stuff. You know, private uses that you guys can coordinate. The management of it is invasive species, like Brian said, and maintaining, you know, any risk hazard trees, anything, you know, big cottonwoods that grow fast. If they're at a risk to cause damage in the future, somebody could take those out. Litter is the biggest one, really, keeping litter and garbage out of there and anybody causing any trouble. So that's the main thing with the wetland facility. Some other quick numbers, just so you guys are aware, Louisa and Brian and us, we worked and gave some more information on these trails. So there's approximately 2.5 miles of sidewalks and trails total with this master plan. And that's what's all been highlighted on the plans up there. So quite a bit of opportunity for the public to get out and move around. It'd be great to have some trails that cut through, and maybe that's something we can work together on in the future. And then on the trails, there is approximately 1,400 feet of trails. There were sort of additional walkways that we provided that weren't required by code. And so that's, you know, how we sort of work to get adjacent to the wetland and have some opportunities to enjoy it. I think that sort of answered most of the questions. Is there anything else I can help with?
No, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I would accept a motion.
Move to approve the final plat of Ridgefield Crossing as presented.
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded to accept the approval of the crossing final plat. Any other questions or comments, Council? All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Passes. Thank you. Moving on to a motion for approval of park naming in Pioneer Village. Mr. Cast.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good evening again, Council. So this is coming back to you from the last meeting. If you recall, we have a new park coming in next to the Ridgefield Apartments there. And throughout 2019, the staff and Parks Board completed a fairly extensive outreach effort to try and gather names for that park, including both in person at Experience Ridgefield as well as online. In total, we received 67 suggested names. And at the last council meeting on January 9th, there was some discussion and council had expressed interest in naming the plaza adjacent to the Pear Tree in Pioneer Village after the Gretsch family, and then naming the park in recognition of the historic Horns Corner name for that area. Since the last meeting, staff has reached out to the developer of Pioneer Village, and they were supportive of the idea to name the plaza around the Pear Tree after the park. And as you can see in this exhibit here, the Pear Tree is sort of next to building one in the diagram there, and there is a little bit of a plaza proposed. And so with that, we wanted to bring this back to council for final naming of the park that is to the east, thank you, or to the west, excuse me.
To clarify, Mr. Cass, the private developer owns the property where the pear tree is.
That current. Is correct.
So would we assist with some type of plaque honoring the Gretsch family if this goes forward?
We potentially could. We hadn't discussed the logistics of that, but I would say between us and the developer, we'll figure out some way to put up a plaque in recognition of them.
Okay, thank you. I also want to make a comment that I was at the Parks Board when this was brought before the Parks Board and they voted on it. And at the time, I had no idea what Horn's Corner was. But since then, I have talked to our oldest citizen in the city, John Burrow, 104 years old, former mayor, and he has a memory like you would not believe. And he informed me extensively about why this should be Horn's Corner and not named after the Gretsch family. I also spoke with Aline Woodage, who for years led the Heritage Day projects and is very much involved in documenting the history of Ridgeville. As a 67 plus years member of Ridgeville. So I want to apologize to the board that my knowledge at that time did not cover the Horn's Corner at all. It was associated with the Gretsch family because that's the ones I had known and the city had been working with since 2012. So just to put that in perspective, I wanted the board to acknowledge you did great outreach work. I just went to some older individuals in the community to get another perspective on it.
Make the motion.
I will make the motion.
Does anyone else want to speak on this first?
I'm not speaking.
You
on
can
it first.
After you make the motion.
I agree with Councillor Day about recognizing the history through the naming of the park after Horn's Corner. And as Ms. Steinbeck mentioned, one of the plans for the Parks Board is to have historical signage. And I think this would be a great opportunity for them to possibly have some plaques or some things maybe with pictures or old maps or something kind of explaining what this area was so that there's a living memory of what was going on there.
Anyone else?
I just wanted to add that I have great respect for when the public engages in a process and votes for stuff, you know, and I always believe that that's a very important part of government. I too reached out to many citizens, older citizens in the community, because I was torn about that, and gathered a bunch of data for myself so I can make a good decision tonight.
Great, thank you. Anyone else?
I would accept the only motion. Other thing I'd have to say is John Burrow's nephew, who is over 100, Roy Garrison, just gave us a...
I would accept the motion.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we name the park Horn's Corner Community Park.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to name the park in Pioneer Village Horn's Corner. Any other questions or comments? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Passes. Thank you, Council. We'll move on to a public hearing. A public hearing and approval of resolution number 570, Ridgeville School District Proposition. Ms. Notneris.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. On February 11th, the voters in Ridgeville School District are going to decide on a general obligation bond, and this resolution relates to the support of that bond by this council. Just to give you a little legal background of what makes this possible, state law does permit a city council to pass a resolution in support of a ballot proposition if two procedural steps are met. The first being that there is a notice of a public hearing that includes the title and the number of the ballot proposition, and that members of the public and members of council who hold views on either side of the issue are given equal opportunity to be able to voice their opinions. And following a public hearing tonight, both of those procedural steps will have been met. So what is this bond? It is a $107 million bond program that will pay to construct a new kindergarten through fourth grade elementary school, will expand Ridgefield High School with a new classroom wing, will renovate the 50-year-old vocational education building, will construct a new fifth and sixth grade intermediate school, and will construct an accessible and inclusive play area at Southridge and Union Ridge Elementary Schools. It's also important to know what this bond is not. It will not be used to purchase new property. That has been done and will continue to be done through school impact fees, which are paid through new development in Ridgefield, and Ridgefield has the highest school impact fees in the county. And it's also important to know that the school impact fees cannot replace this bond, because those fees can only cover a proportionate share of the costs for the need that they create, which is about 20% or so of the need. Also, this bond will not pay for city administrative offices or for ball fields. The city has already done that through payment for this building, the RAC, and RORC. So I would just recommend that you hold a public hearing, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Council, questions of Ms. Notenaris? Okay. Seeing none, I will open this public hearing. This will not be a back and forth conversation. If someone wants to come up and give comments, we'll take those comments. Anyone wishing to speak at this public hearing on approval of resolution number 570, the Ridgefield School District bond? Anyone wishing to speak at this public hearing for the Ridgefield School District bond? Seeing none, I will close this public hearing, and I will ask for a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I would ask that we approve resolution number 517, the Ridgefield School District proposition, and waive the second reading.
It's actually 570.
Didn't I say 570?
517.
517 is 570. Thank you.
I'll second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded to approve resolution number 570 as presented. Any further questions or comments, Council? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. Thank you, Council. Next, we'll move on to a public hearing and first reading of ordinance number 1311, Pioneer Frontage Development Agreement. Mr. Cast.
Thank you again, Mr. Mayor. For the past several years, staff has been working with the developers west of Royal Road for widening and improvements to Pioneer Street on several projects. From east to west, these projects are Pioneer Village, the CenturyLink property, the now not Gretsch Community Park, Horns Corner Community Park, Ridgefield Apartments, and the Heron Woods subdivision. Due to the timing and coinciding on all these projects coming together in the same amount of time, WashDOT required, rather than have each developer construct their improvements individually, that the project be designed and constructed as one larger project, which is what has necessitated this development agreement. Hinton and SGA Engineering, I'd like to thank Joe Mello, who's here today. He volunteered to take the lead on putting this development agreement together to define the roles for all the parties. The city's role in all this is to provide TIF credits, one, for the work, and then secondarily to complete wetland permitting and mitigation for the wetland that is located on the Horns Corner Park site. At this time, the permitting has been complete and the mitigation bank credits have been purchased in December of last year with money that was budgeted in the 2019 budget for that purpose. I do want to draw council's attention to the budget and financial impacts section. The staff report wasn't updated with the most recent figure. There was quite a bit of conversation over span of several months on that TIF eligible amount. The amount was properly updated in the agreement that's attached to your packet, but not in the staff report. So the total amount of TIF credits that we would be issuing for this project is $808,698, and that amount is consistent with the updated TIF that we presented to you earlier this evening. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions about this development agreement.
Council, questions of Mr. Cast? Okay. Seeing none, I will open this public hearing. This is a public hearing on first reading of ordinance number 1311, Pioneer Frontage Development Agreement. Anyone wishing to speak at this public hearing? Anyone wishing to speak at this public hearing on Pioneer Frontage Development Agreement? Anyone wishing to speak at this public hearing? Seeing none, I will close the public hearing. This is the first reading. It'll come back to the council in 2 weeks. Next, we'll move on to public comment. Anyone wishing to speak to the council, please step to the podium, state your name and the city you live in, and please try to keep your comments to 3 minutes.
My name is Michael Jennings, and I live in Ridgefield. I'm a Ridgefield resident. I have two subjects. I'm writing a book about how people use their brains, and I've been researching it for 50 years, and there's a lot of very difficult subjects to understand, and one of those subjects is, how is it possible, I'm serious about this, how is it possible that Ridgefield government can be so excellent? It's just amazing. To see how wonderful the government is run, particularly provincial government is run, particularly compared to other places around here. And in 2015, former city councilman David Taylor told me that everybody wanted the best for Ridgefield. There were no hidden intentions, and he named some other local cities where there were hidden intentions. So still, if you really want to be strictly logical, it's difficult to, how did that get started? And I was lucky to be in a conversation with Clyde Burkle, and he said that 13 or 14 years ago, the Reflector newspaper would every week have something negative to say about that happened in Ridgefield. And then Ron Onslow got involved, and Clyde said that Ron's involvement was a gift to Ridgefield. And so that's apparently, as far as I've been able to do research, that's how Ridgefield got to be so wonderfully well managed. And thank you very much, Ron Onslow. I need to do more research about that, of course. Okay, second very quick thing. The school bond advertising has not been sufficient. The advertising talks about what everybody wants, which is good schools. What they don't talk about is the concerns of people who might want to be negative. And I did write an article about that, and I sent it to all of you. And I could make it available to anybody who wants to circulate it by email. In fact, there is a financial advantage to having good schools in that it raises the value of houses. Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak to the council?
Oh, well, one more thing. And let's try to understand even better how is it that Ridgefield government can be so excellent?
Thank you.
I haven't been doing any research, but I like to communicate, and I will find that the council, and I consider one of the reasons that it's operating very good, is communications. Council's available, the city staff is available. All you gotta do is take the time to contact them. And I think that's what's making for a good council in the city of Ridgefield. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak at the council? Anyone else wishing to speak to the council? If not, moving on to council reports. Councilor Day.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, and citizens who come out tonight. I attended 19 meetings since the last time we met 2 weeks ago. One of the most memorable meetings was last night to meaningful movies that the Library District puts on in our Liberty Theater about small farms, and especially small organic farms. And in the city, the staff is working on partnerships, and it's been mentioned why this city is so great. It is partnerships. It's volunteers. It's the people who step up and want to be on the cemetery board, on the parks board, on the planning commission, on all the nonprofits in this town that work together. For a town of our size, there's a lot of nonprofits and people who have special interest, whether it's in the refuge or the gleaners, like Norman and Carol. That's what it's about. People step up and volunteer in this community. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Lindsay.
I didn't go to as many meetings as Councillor Day, but I did go to a few. And I've already spoken a whole bunch tonight, so I'm going to keep it brief. The one that I went to that I found the most interesting was also last night, I think it was last night, was at the vocational ed building, and it was a walkthrough done by the school district just to give the public a better idea of how it is functioning or not functioning and how it could benefit from the bond. And I had never toured it before, and I couldn't believe that they don't have the electrical capacity to run all the equipment that they have for the kids. That just blew me away. So anyways, that's my report.
Thank you. Councillor Akeley, your most memorable meeting.
I went to a pre-application conference last week for Tri Mountain Station, which is over there where Papa Pete's and Teriyaki Thai is. And so there's that RV park over there, and that property owner wants to develop that, I believe it's 10 acres of property, and it's exciting that we're going to have probably about 10 businesses, the drawing showed, going in there eventually, right off of I-5. That's all I have.
Great, thank you. Councillor Wells.
I attended 6 meetings since the last council meeting, but the most impressive one was we had the opportunity on the 10th to break bread with our local legislators, not just the 18th district, but along with the port and the school district. We brought our priorities that we were looking for help with this next year. Also, we gave them kudos for what they've done in the past and asked them if there was anything we could help with their performance in Olympia, for as testifying on bills or that. The other thing is next week, Tuesday and Wednesday, the entire council is going to AWSC meeting in Olympia, and we will be back for the 1-2 punch. We'll hit them up the second time, the ones that weren't there. But get to be on a first name basis with them is very, very beneficial to this community, because they come back and reward us greatly for whenever they give us something, we carry through with it and get the project done. And they like to see the success with their name behind it. Thank you.
Councilor Zimmer.
So I went to the Columbia River Economic Development Committee. Their education committee was at Henrietta Lacks Health and Bioscience, right? Sandra was there also. And we got a tour. We listened to some of the kids talk. It's just kind of a niche high school that kids don't have to have a minimum GPA. They just have to apply, and it's a smaller school. They do all different kinds of biosciences and health sciences. They actually have, we toured one of their programs where they have actual, it looks like a hospital, and they have hospital rooms and hospital beds and life-size dummies that talk to them and react to different things. And it was really neat to see how excited these kids are. That, you know, maybe they didn't necessarily want to be right in a regular school. They want to go right into something that they love. And when they come out of there, they have the education to go right into jobs as well. So I thought it was neat because I know that our superintendent, Dr. McCann, talks about eventually potentially having a kind of a niche high school here in Ridgefield as well as we grow. So just seeing the different ones that the Evergreen School District in Vancouver has, kind of just starts thinking for something that I know I have one of my kids that's not like the regular kid that wants to go to school. So something like that would be good for those kids. So that's it.
Great. Thank you. Councilor Onslow.
Well, I have a couple of comments as well as kind of a report. It wasn't Ron Onslow that did this. It helped write the CART in Ridgefield, but I went out and recruited people like Don Stoss and Lee Wells. And
they didn't recruit me.
And yeah, came and put himself on my doorstep. But anyway, it is the people that are around. And one of the reasons that Ridgefield is successful is that we participate in everything, not only locally, but nationally and in state and in the county. For example, the legislative breakfast, we had almost everybody in our county, the legislators here, and it was extremely well attended in our new meeting room up in Rourke. Also, the leadership Clark County has met out here for the last few years. They met in the new facility here, and I know Mr. Stoss and myself and Sandra Day and were involved in that leadership Clark County, working with them. I attended a CDBG, which is a community development block grant program that I've been involved with for City of Ridgefield for years, and it appears that we are going to be one of the leading contenders of getting a grant for one of our projects. I'm also on the CTRAN board, and there is a new election in there, and basically it wasn't a big meeting at all. But the CREDC, Columbia River Economic Development Council, every person up here was at that breakfast. And God help us, Sandra Day and myself, you know, we have to drag ourselves out of bed when it's 5:30. But we were all there. We were the only city in the county that had everybody at that meeting, at that breakfast. We also, most of us were all of us at the BIA, the Building Industry Association. We were the only city that was represented by everybody on our council. And then last night, I had a very interesting meeting, and I was at the Le Center council meeting, and it reminded me of Ridgefield about 10 years ago. They are just beginning to grow a lot, and they are going through the same pains that we went through at that time and trying to make decisions that are right. And they have a pretty doggone good council, and I think that they were all reelected, so that they've got some stability there. So it's good that North County is represented that way. And also we have a new, I don't know whether Don would talk about it, but we have a new mayor in Yakult that seems to be very excited. Now that would be the first mayor to be really excited to be mayor in Yakult. So we're looking forward to that.
Thank you very much. Well, we were all at all the same meetings pretty much, but I think the highlight was, and Councillor Onslow mentioned it, was we were all invited to two economic forecast sessions. And they were put on by economists from all over the United States. And the good news is the economy is booming. There's no recession in sight. And the future of Ridgefield is bright because of that, and will continue to be bright and move forward. And so with that, Ms. Nottenaris.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just have one thing. We have a new theme for our February 1st Saturday, bacon, baseball, and bingo. There will be all kinds of bacon-inspired food, and games, and we will have our two favorite baseball teams there. Rally will be represented. We'll have some sputters there, and lots of games to play with them, and we will have bingo. So that event is right here at the rack in the Commons, because it's going to rain on February 1st, so we're going to be here. And also, just another comment, since we're talking about First Saturday, we have a new theme for another month later in the year that will be to honor all of our volunteers and nonprofit organizations, to celebrate them and to provide, have them present so they can provide information to the residents of Ridgefield about what they do and how they can be involved, people can be involved in helping to volunteer for them. Make a Difference Day, that's coming up in November. That's all I have. Nope. November 1st, Saturday.
Well, that's way in November.
Yeah.
Can't even really think that.
And we have a lot of other themes that are really important in between now and then. We don't have a lot that we can change.
Ms. Parker. All right. Thank you. Ms. Garbo.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. As I mentioned earlier, the consultant is going to have a stakeholders meeting at the walk with the it's just a consultant and the sub-area plan residents that are impacted by the sub-area plan. And we just made the offer for our permit tech yesterday, and so we filled up positions, so thank goodness. And we really want to start moving forward with the electronic plan upgrade. Well, we want to let her get settled first, and then we'll try to move forward with the project. And as you're aware, that we lost our building official, and we started the recruitment, so hopefully that's going to be filled soon too. And we right now signed a contract with a consulting firm to do building inspections to kind of fill the gap. We want to make sure we provide seamless service.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Katz.
I think you've heard enough from me this evening, but I'm happy to answer any questions the council has.
Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. Just two quick things. One thing, we received notification last week that for the fifth year in a row, we received the Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting for our comprehensive annual financial report for last year. So we're currently working on closing out 2019 and finishing up the new financial statements. So it seems like it just keeps going in cycles. The last thing is, you received your investment portfolio report for year-end 2019. We had about $10.3 million in investments, including our investment pools. Everything's within policy. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Mr. Johnson, thank you so much. 5 years in a row. Thank you so much. Great job.
You're welcome.
I was going to say, they gave a format on the financial statement at Le Center last night, and don't say I said this, but he could use some help. You'd
We're
be
adjourned.
Good.